this is Derek Frost from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next hour, I'll be reading to you from the Triangle Business Journal. The content of this program is intended for a blind and print-impaired audience. And we start on the front page of the Triangle Business Journal with a special report headline, CEO of the Year Awards. 20 of the Triangle's top executives who have propelled the region's economy forward. And that's the headline on the front page. The actual articles begin inside the Triangle Business Journal. And we'll start by reading the list of the winners and then give you at least one of the articles. Making the Cut. Here's the list of the 2016 CEO of the Year Award winners. Robert Barnhill Jr., Barnhill Contracting. Jim Captain, Credit Suisse. Scott Custer, Yadkin Financial. Sally Edwards, Marbles Kids Museum. Stuart France, Biologics Incorporated. Donald Ginzig, WakeMed Health and Hospitals. Greg Haddam, Empire Properties. Bob Hatley, Paragon Bank. Jill Wells Heath, Calix Engineers and Consultants. Jesse Lipson, Citrix. Tom Pike, Quintiles. Nancy McFarlane, Mayor of Raleigh. Doug McMillan, YMCA of the Triangle. Jay Fielding Miller, Capstrat. Billy Redmond, Trademark Properties. Larry Robbins, Wyrick Robbins Yates and Ponton, LLP. Stephen Scott, Wake Technical Community College. Steve Stroud, NAI, Carroll Atlantic Realty. Robert D. Tier Jr., Tier Associates. And Garland Tucker, Triangle Capital Corporation. And we'll read one of the articles. This one will be on Jesse Lipson of Citrix. First, there's a box headlined Closer Look. Age, 38. Birthplace, Iowa City, Iowa. Education, BA in Philosophy, Duke University. Family members, wife, Brooks Bell. First job, handing out free samples of mug root beer. Jesse Lipson didn't set out to be a tech entrepreneur. His resume reveals a Duke University philosophy degree, not exactly what your typical software developer sprouts from, as he readily admits. But Lipson, who delved into entrepreneurship immediately after graduation, definitely had the entrepreneurial itch. He taught himself programming and co-founded his first company in 1999. Lipson's big break came with ShareFile, which evolved from an internet services firm he co-founded called Novel Products. The Raleigh company, which enabled businesses to store, sync, and share their files across multiple devices, announced it was being acquired by Citrix Systems in 2011. Lipson became vice president and general manager of the group overseeing his company. Instead of taking the money and going on a permanent vacation, he stayed with his team. And in his spare time, Lipson teamed up with his wife, fellow entrepreneur Brooks Bell, serial entrepreneur Jason Wyden, an entrepreneurial activist, Chris Gergen, on a new project, HQ Raleigh. Additional entrepreneurship programs would follow, such as Living Learning Community, the Think House, and the Citrix Startup Accelerator, which, despite Citrix reallocating its support, may still return to Raleigh this year. When it comes to innovation, density is absolutely critical, Lipson said in a 2015 interview. He cited studies that show that for every doubling of population density, innovation increases by 15%, which makes sense because of all the cross-pollination of information that starts to happen when other companies are located close to each other, he says. In the meantime, Lipson's leadership at Citrix was being recognized. Then CEO Mark Templeton said Lipson's push helped inspire the company's expansion into a sprawling campus in downtown Raleigh's Warehouse District. There, Citrix is one of the key players in what economic development officials hope is a revitalization of an area that used to be occupied by steel warehouses. It starts here, Lipson said 2 years ago. And that was written by Lauren Onasorge. And now we turn to Biz, a quick glance at Triangle Happenings, written by digital producer Mark DeRoberts. The first headline, Your Fowler Shine at Eatery Industry Gala. It was a special night for two Raleigh natives at the National Restaurant Association Education Foundation's annual gala event in Washington, D.C. on April 12. Van Uhr, owner of the Angus Barn Restaurant in Raleigh, was there to present the annual Thad and Alice Uhr Ambassador of Hospitality Award, named for her parents and founders of the landmark restaurant. And yours restaurant neighbor from down the road on Glenwood Avenue, retired Golden Corral president and CEO Ted Fowler, was there to accept the award. There are certain people who run their businesses with so much integrity and always doing the right thing, even if it's the hardest thing to do, and that is the way Ted does it, Ure said in a video interview presented at the awards gala. Fowler retired in 2014 after 25 years at the helm of Golden Corral and is now a director at the Buffet Restaurant's parent company, Investors Management Corporation. He was named the 2016 Ambassador of Hospitality winner for his achievements in the restaurant and hospitality industry. More accolades for Durham Barista. Durham coffee roaster Counterculture has another accolade. Its own Lem Butler, head of wholesale customer support and barista training of the Carolinas, just won first place in the U.S. Barista Championship at the U.S. Coffee Championships in Atlanta. The competition pitted him against nearly 50 coffee professionals from around the world. Butler, who has worked with Counterculture since 2007, has 5 regional titles under his belt, making him the most decorated barista in U.S. competition history, according to Counterculture. He had to prepare and serve 4 espressos, 4 cappuccinos, and 4 signature espresso beverages during a 15-minute race against the clock. His specialty drink? An ode to his southern roots called Southern Playalistic Cadillac Coffee with nitrous oxide for creaminess. His next stop, the World Barista Championship in Dublin in June. 12 years in this industry has done so much for my family and me, and now I'm asking myself, what will I give back? Lem said. Gesseman, longtime Eco Devo head, dies. The longtime leader of the Carolinas Gateway Partnership in Rocky Mount, John Gesseman, died April 18 following a battle with cancer. He was 69 years old. Since 1996, Gesseman had served as the only president and CEO of the Economic Development Partnership representing Edgecombe and Nash counties. He stepped down from his leadership role in 2015 only when the illness forced him to. He had remained on staff in a part-time role as head of special projects. The partnership's board in December hired Norris Tolson, former president and CEO of the North Carolina Biotechnology Center, to succeed Gesseman as president of the public-private partnership. Charlie Hebdo writer to speak at Duke University. French writer and journalist Philippe Lancon will speak at Duke University on the vital force of reading and writing in the wake of terror attacks. Lancon is a contributor to the French satirical weekly Charlie Hebdo and was participating in the editorial meeting the morning of the terrorist attack on January 7, 2015. He came out wounded and ready to write again a week later. His talk, How to Read and Write in the Wake of an Attack, will be in French with an English synopsis provided. The Q&A will also be conducted in English. A reception will follow. Beeson preps for classes on cider. Maddie Beeson, a cider instructor for the U.S. Association of Cider Makers and co-owner of the newly opened Black Twig Cider House in Durham, will begin offering monthly cider classes. Upcoming dates for Beeson cider classes are June 11, July 23rd, and August 27th from 3 p.m. to 4 p.m. and will include a Black Twig cider glass to take home. While cider is the largest growing beverage segment in the country, many people still think of cider as sweet and syrupy, explains Beeson. There's a cider out there for everyone, and I want to introduce our guests to the huge range of ciders now at their fingertips. Another great way to sample ciders will be at the TXOTX Fest on September 10. This cider festival will bring producers and chefs together to celebrate ciders. Wegmans secures top spot in grocery survey. Market Force this week unveiled a ranking of U.S. grocers by Composite Loyalty Index. Consumers were asked to rate their satisfaction with their most recent grocery shopping experience and their likelihood to refer that grocer to others. With a score of 76%, Wegmans Food Markets, based in Rochester, New York, took the top spot. Lakeland, Florida-based Publix was just behind at number 2 with a score of 75%. Publix's top competitors, Kroger Company and Walmart Stores Incorporated, ranked well below the top 5. Kroger was number 8. Walmart came in dead last at number 15. The findings are the results of an online survey conducted in February across the U.S. There were 10,025 respondents. And finally, in a section called You Said It, in response to a TBJ poll question, what does Raleigh's Crabtree Valley Mall need next? David Killian says, a dedicated exit would be ideal, alternately fast-tracking traffic management plans along the Glenwood Corridor. Elizabeth Estill Campbell says, a facelift. It is old, tired, and unattractive, and has horrible parking. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to the On Real Estate page, written by Amanda Hoyle. The main headline, Hotel Unveils Time Capsule. Washington Duke's uncovering of the time capsule reflects Durham's rich, tobacco-dependent history. It was a strange call that Duke University archivist Valerie Gillespie says she received one day last fall from the management at the university-owned Washington Duke Inn and Golf Club. They had found a bashed-up metal box that had been in hotel storage for several years. An anonymous donor had left it with the staff, but little else was known about it except that it was supposed to be a time capsule rescued from the 1920s era Washington Duke Hotel before it was demolished in 1975. I was surprised by the great condition it was in, Gillespie says. Everything inside was crisp and there was no sign of weather damage. That's not always the case with time capsules. What Gillespie found inside that brass box made of old printing press plates was a catalog of the life of the people and the commerce in downtown Durham on that day in November 1924, when the cornerstone was laid for what would become the first major hotel in Durham, the 16-story Washington Duke Hotel. There was a copy of the Durham Morning Herald, packs of Chesterfield cigarettes and Durham Bull tobacco, hose and socks made at the Durham Hoser Mill, small tobacco bags made at the Golden Belt Factory, and a pamphlet of information for new investors of the more than $1 million hotel project. You can tell these people recognize this as a major historical moment for Durham, she says. The Washington Duke Hotel opened in 1925 at the site of the current brick courtyard of CCB Plaza at the intersection of East Chapel Hill, Parrish, Market, and Corcoran Streets, home also to the iconic Durham Bull bronze sculpture. The hotel was demolished in 1975 when the owners could no longer afford its upkeep and couldn't find a buyer for the property. Gillespie and her team have pulled together an exhibit of the time capsule and many of its contents. For that will be on display for a limited time at Duke University's Rubenstein Library. The exhibit is open to the public. Historic homeowners parade carriage house expansion. Jody Strankowski, owner of the Merriman Wynn House event facility in downtown Raleigh, says the new carriage house expansion built next to the historic home on Blunt Street has already passed a key test, silence. It did everything it was supposed to do, Strankowski says. The whole building was designed, she says, with her acoustically sensitive neighbors in mind, ones who have lodged numerous noise complaints since the Merriman Wynn House opened in 2014 and forced brides to find alternatives to live band performances. At a party held April 8 to open the new facility, she cranked up the volume. So far, no complaints. Her nearly $500,000 investment in the new 3,000-square-foot carriage house building that connects into the Merriman Wynn House, plus some landscape improvements, was one that Strankowski says came much sooner than she had originally planned. It's something we saw as a long-term project that would give us more flexibility, especially in the winter and summer, and for more weekday corporate events, she says. Happy and Hale opens new Durham restaurant. The new Durham 9th Street location for the popular Happy and Hale restaurant has opened for business, and its staff will be hosting its official grand opening event April 30. The new Happy and Hale is located at 703 9th Street in a former post office building and is nearly three times the size of the original Happy and Hale that opened in 2014 at Raleigh City Plaza. The Durham location will have extended hours, adding dine-in seating with weekend brunch and dinner options, plus an extended menu that also includes a made-to-order juice bar, cold-pressed juice cocktails, and local beer on tap. K&G Fashion to open at Cary Crossroads. This summer, K&G Fashion Superstore will be opening its second Triangle store location at the Crossroads Plaza Retail Power Center in Cary. K&G will be moving into the 10,400 square foot space formerly occupied by the Shoe Carnival store near the Michaels Arts and Crafts store. The store will be located at 404 Crossroads Boulevard, Suite 1910. K&G also has a store on Capitol Boulevard in Raleigh. Boo Koo to open second location in Wake Forest. The owners of Boo Koo, the downtown Raleigh restaurant that's built a following for its eclectic global street food menu, is planning a second location opening later in 2016 on the fringes of the Heritage Golf Course community in Wake Forest. Construction is already underway on the building on Rogers Road across the street from the new Publix-anchored retail center that's also opening in 2016. The restaurant will be next to where Wine and Beer 101 will also be relocating its Wake Forest location. By comparison, he says, the downtown location has 200 seats inside and 64 seats on the outdoor patio. The Wake Forest spot will have about 170 seats inside and another 80 seats on its expansive patio. The Raleigh restaurant employs about 60 people, and so will the Wake Forest location. The goal, owner Sean Degnan says, is to be open by fall. I really do hope it's not December. And now we turn to the On Pharmaceuticals page, written by Jason DeBruin. The first headline, drug developer Nephrogenics searches for new options. Raleigh-based drug developer Nephrogenics Incorporated was once a bright star in the Triangle Life Sciences world, but fell from the skies and has now terminated employment contracts with its CEO and CSO as it searches to complete a reverse merger. It owns rights to an experimental drug called Pyridorin, which it was developing to treat patients suffering from kidney disease, specifically diabetic nephropathy, a chronic degenerative disease of the kidney caused by diabetes that affects about 6 million people in the United States. On February 10, 2014, it completed an initial public offering, selling shares for $12 and raising $33 million. By the fourth quarter that year, shares traded as high as $17.98. Using December 31, 2014 as a date of demarcation, Nephrogenics was the best-performing IPO of the five Triangle companies to go public that year, a group that included high flyers like Inc. Research and PRA Health Sciences. It wouldn't last. In the summer of 2014, Nephrogenics sought more cash and filed intention to raise $35 million through a secondary offering. The move spooked investors and shares on the open market plunged. This started a spiral in which the company would have to sell more shares just to raise the same amount of money, something that would only serve to dilute shareholders more and drove the stock down even further. In the end, it raised $7.1 million through a public offering on July 22, 2015, $5 million through a private placement on November 6, 2015, and $1.1 million through an at-the-market equity offering of common stock in the second half of 2015. Shares continued to slide in part because many biotechnology and pharmaceutical stocks took a hit as presidential candidates took on drug pricing and the general public turned ire toward Martin Shkreli and Turing Pharmaceuticals, among others. As shares slid below $1, a required threshold for continuing listing on NASDAQ, Nephrogenics leadership announced in late February that it would pause the clinical program of Pyridorin, evaluate a restructuring of its operations, and implement a strategic transaction. The board of directors made this determination in light of the remaining trial costs, the company's cash balance, and the condition of the capital markets, according to a release on February 24. Nephrogenics retained MTS Health Partners LP to evaluate options. Bucking trend, Durham's Viamet plots public stock offering after $60 million funder. If Viamet Pharmaceuticals pulls the trigger on an initial public offering, it will certainly buck the IPO trend of 2016. So far this year has been one in which companies prefer to stay private as the public waters, especially in biotechnology, have not been kind to investors. Consider that there have been just 9 IPOs so far this year, according to Renaissance Capital, which closely tracks public offerings. That's a 78% decrease from last year. Those IPOs have resulted in just $700 million in cash raised for companies, or some 87% less than the $5.6 billion raised through the same amount of time for companies last year. What's more, the returns of those IPOs would not boost confidence. The Renaissance IPO Index shows that companies that completed an IPO this year have lost 8% so far, compared with an S&P 500 that remained basically flat. Of course, cash requirements can help push a company toward an IPO. In its filing, Viamet reports that without the offering, it would not have enough cash to meet its obligations through the rest of this year. On a pro forma basis, Viamet reports having $45 million in cash and equivalents available. Durham-based Viamet is a drug developer working on antifungal treatments. Since inception, the company has raised $112 million from private investors, including $60 million last year after it pulled an IPO. And in a section called She Said It, the quote, "The goal is to put Duke's licensing efforts on par with its excellence in research and so many other areas. When people think about startups and licensing and efficient technology transfer, I want Duke to also be on the tip of their tongues." And that's from Robin Razor, hired as director, Duke University's Office of Licensing and Ventures on April 18. And finally, in a section called Big Numbers, $85 million, value of a larger deal in which Swedish contract pharmaceutical manufacturer Recipharm acquired the pharmaceutical contract development and manufacturing, CDMO, businesses of Chemwell Biopharma, which is based in Research Triangle Park. And now we turn to the On Technology page written by Lauren Onasorge. The main headline, EDM shutters Morrisville facility. Even as Raleigh-based EDM Americas is shuttering its Morrisville presence, the company is building its high-tech workforce, says CEO Scott Byers. Byers says the decision to close the Morrisville facility, a move that means the loss of 49 jobs, is about optimizing the operation. "Like most entities, we take a strategic review from time to time," he said in an interview, adding that this time, that review found that consolidation was the best approach. "It's just more and more technology-oriented. There's less paper in our society, our business, our industry as a whole." As EDM works to close the Morrisville operation, it will actually be expanding in downtown Raleigh, where it moved its headquarters from Scranton, Pennsylvania, 2 years ago. At the time, Byers said his tech talent drove the decision to locate in Raleigh, more so than the then 200 EDM employees in nearby Morrisville. That headcount has declined significantly at its Airport Road and Perimeter Park Drive locations over the past several months. Byers expects the closure to be complete by July 31. Some employees are being offered transfer opportunities in downtown Raleigh. Byers says the company is hiring several consulting and technology specialists to meet its growing digital demand. Overall, he says the company is well aligned for the future. "The negative piece is what's impacting these 49 people," he says. Functions conducted at the Morrisville Production Center, which include capture, communication, and fulfillment services, are being consolidated to other EDM locations in South Carolina, New Jersey, and Pennsylvania. Morrisville employees will be able to apply for 20 open positions in South Carolina, according to the company. Million-dollar expansion, one step closer. Battle Creek, Michigan-based snack giant Kellogg's has signed an incentive deal approved 2 months ago by Cary officials. While the town is celebrating, with officials expecting an imminent groundbreaking, Kellogg says they haven't officially given the green light on the project. "We recently signed the agreement with the city of Cary. However, Kellogg's final approval of the expansion project is still pending," said company representative Chris Charles. "We have no other details at this time." The company had asked for a $216,450 performance-based grant from the town, calling it a competitive necessity in securing the expansion. According to town documents, the project was expected to increase the tax base by about $72,150, despite the fact that it wouldn't mean any more jobs in Cary. The town council voted its approval in February. Lana High, Cary's intergovernmental relations manager, says the deal became official April 13. Other than a disclosed layoff round in 2009, Kellogg's has been relatively quiet in Cary since acquiring Keebler, the parent company of Cary-based Austin Quality Foods, in 2001. As part of Cary's incentive deal, Kellogg's would be required to retain its current headcount or else repay the grant, according to town documents. Co-founders Capital's Gardner muscles up portfolio with cash infusion for Savvy. A year after registering its first fund with the state of North Carolina, angel investor David Gardner's new entrepreneurship group, Co-founders Capital, is seven investments in. Savvy, formerly known as Akili Software, according to a securities filing, became Cary-based Co-Founder Capital's seventh investment, its first in 2016. The company provides software for the home healthcare industry. Gardner says he first engaged with the company more than a year ago when its founder, Michelle Harper, presented to RTP Capital. Gardner led the due diligence for RTP's inquiry and ultimately didn't invest. "But she stayed at it, kept working along, with no funding, figuring out how to stay alive," he says. And it's that gumption that had him ultimately signing a check, contributing to the round, which had three investors contributing $545,315, according to the filing. Today, Harper is working out of co-founder's Cary incubator space, and she won't be co-founder's lone investment this year. Gardner says he has multiple term sheets out and has been busy evaluating additional triangle opportunities for co-founders' cash. So far, the seven investments have totaled just more than $2 million, he says. And as he has $12 million to work with, "I'm not even 25% deployed right now," he says. And in a section called They Said It, the first quote: "Have a business with sales. If you don't think enough of your business to get the customers, the sharks won't think much of it either." Mark Cuban, Dallas Mavericks owner and shark on ABC's Shark Tank, offering pitch advice. Shark Tank holds an open casting call in Raleigh on May 13 at Marble's Kids Museum. And the next quote: "We have 10 million people coming through this facility on an annual basis, and that's a lot of people to reach." And that's from Michael Landguth, CEO of Raleigh-Durham International Airport, on the challenges of rolling out a new parking plan that allows travelers to reserve spots in advance online. He says his team has been everywhere, from social media to local radio stations, trying to get word out about the new parking program. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to the A Better World page, written by Todd Cohen. Todd Cohen also publishes Philanthropy North Carolina, and we start with his column, the headline, "Nonprofit Focuses on Oral Health." The dental clinic at the Orange County Department of Health offers oral health screenings in county schools that serve free or discounted lunches to the most students. It also promotes the screenings through local pediatricians. Wake County's dental clinic is giving sealants to 500 low-income children to help protect their teeth from decay. And kids in the youth sports program at the Boys and Girls Clubs in Wake County protect their teeth with 1,000 donated mouth guards. Those efforts are among dozens throughout the state supported by Delta Dental of North Carolina and the Delta Dental Foundation. Our mission is to improve the oral health of the communities we serve, says Kurt Ladig, president and CEO of Delta Dental of North Carolina. The statewide nonprofit and independent licensed affiliate of Delta Dental Plans Association in Chicago provides dental insurance to employer groups and individuals. It counts 2,950 licensed dentists in its network, or 3 of every 5 dentists in North Carolina, Ladig says. Operating with 17 employees and offices in Raleigh, Charlotte, and Greensboro, Delta Dental serves 340,000 members at 650 employer groups and expects to generate net income of $1 million in 2016 on revenue of $110 million. That's up from $30 million in revenue and 105,000 members at 120 employer groups in 2011, when Ladig joined the then struggling affiliate as it became part of an operating group of 3 other affiliates. At that time, those 3 affiliates contributed a total of $1 million to the Michigan-based Delta Dental Foundation, which makes grants in all 4 states. In North Carolina, over the past 5 years, the foundation has contributed a total of $240,000 in grants of up to $5,000 each to nonprofits and local health departments to serve 52,000 children throughout the state. And for the past 3 years, after it began generating net income, Ladig says, Delta Dental has contributed a total of $125,000 through discretionary grant making. Grants from the foundation support services where a dentist directly serves a child or it's educational, Ladig says. A grant to the Transylvania County Department of Health in western North Carolina, for example, will support oral education for preschool children. Poor dental health also creates a big social cost, he says. Many uninsured people with dental problems, for example, visit emergency rooms, which cost 10 times to 12 times more than a visit to the dentist, he says. Those additional costs to hospitals are built into the cost of private health care, and if people visiting emergency rooms are eligible for Medicaid, taxpayers may be picking up part of the cost, Ladig says. So we need to find ways, he adds, to treat these children and adults in the proper setting, which is a dental office. And in nonprofit news, the headline that starts it off, Kimley Horn stocks food bank's pantry. Kimley Horn, a planning and design consulting firm headquartered in Raleigh, donated 20,000 pounds of food to more than 50 food banks across the country. Our employees are passionate about helping their communities through their work, improving roadways, designing healthcare facilities, building bridges, addressing environmental concerns, and more, says the firm's president and CEO, John C. Atz. The food drive was a great opportunity to play a different role in the communities where we live and work, he says. Carey Family Dental will host its 5th annual Dentistry from the Heart event on April 23 at its office at 1149 Kildare Farm Road. Adults 18 and older with a valid ID can receive a free extraction, filling, or cleaning from a team of 9 dentists assisted by staff and university student volunteers. North Carolina's National College Savings Program, NC529 Plan, and Marble's Kids Museum are collaborating to support school readiness and encourage families to plan ahead for college. The NC529 Plan will sponsor 529 Savings Play Day at Marble's Kids Museum on May 29. Families will have the opportunity to get hands-on with financial literacy and learn about North Carolina's college savings program and the importance of planning ahead. NC529 Plan will also be the presenting sponsor of the annual Kickoff to Kindergarten School Readiness events at Marble's. And finally, BioVentus is the corporate sponsor of the 2016 Triangle Walk to Cure Arthritis. The walk is seeking to raise $117,000 to help end arthritis. And now we'll read from a page called Washington Watch, written by Kent Hoover. The headline, GSA making it harder for small businesses to win federal contracts. U.S. Representative Steve Chabot, chairman of the House Small Business Committee, has asked the General Services Administration to give small businesses better access to federal contracts. Selling stuff to Uncle Sam is one way for small businesses to grow, but the General Services Administration has made this harder, according to the leaders of the House Small Business Committee. Getting on GSA's multiple award schedules used to be a way for small businesses to, quote, get their foot in the door for federal contracting, unquote. Chabot, Republican from Ohio, and U.S. Representative Nydia Velazquez, Democrat from New York, wrote in a letter to GSA, but the agency now favors a category management approach that makes it harder for small businesses to win federal contracts, they contend. Plus, many of the contracting vehicles now used by GSA have bundled so many goods together in one contract that a lot of small businesses do not have the capabilities to bid for it, despite having previously provided some of the goods or services under the MAS contracts. As a result, the number of small firms serving as suppliers to the government in certain areas has gone from hundreds to just a few handfuls, they say. This is not only bad for small businesses, it's bad for the government because less competition means higher prices, they argue. Plus, it's bad for the nation's industrial base because small businesses frozen out of category management vehicles may not be able to remain open. The letter ends with a request to GSA to explain what steps it's taking to make it easier for small businesses to do business with the agency. It is our hope that we can work collaboratively to ensure all businesses have access to contracting opportunities at the GSA, the letter states. But don't be surprised if they haul GSA officials in front of their committee for a more confrontational hearing. This committee likes to put government officials on the hot seat if they're not doing right by small businesses. And now we turn to the Viewpoint page, starting with the editor's notebook, written by Sugata Mukherjee, who is editor of Triangle Business Journal. The headline, Good for Stockholders, Bad for the Triangle. Every time I hear that two large companies are in preliminary talks for a possible deal, all I can think about is the potential for job loss if the companies merged operations. When news broke earlier this week that Burlington-based LabCorp is in early talks with Raleigh's Inc. Research to perhaps find some common business line they can work on together, I started thinking about the effect on the some 6,400 people that Inc. employs globally. LabCorp employs more than 50,000. Large companies merge or are acquired because of one fundamental principle. They want to operate more efficiently and return a bigger chunk of profits to its shareholders. Sometimes it makes sense to simply buy another company rather than reinvent the process and build a division from the ground up. Now, no one has told us LabCorp is looking to buy Inc. Research, but if they were looking at buying, they will buy a company on the rise. As our cover story last week pointed out, Inc. Research is the best-run public company in the Triangle. It made $117 million in profit from $1.4 billion in revenue, almost a 10% return that ranked it among the top three of all public companies in North Carolina. LabCorp, in comparison, is getting bigger and bigger, but it is not as efficient. The company made $436 million in net profit on about $8 billion in revenue, so it's about eight times bigger than Inc. Research, but only made 2.5 times in net profit. So one can easily see the interest and the potential benefit to LabCorp shareholders. Unfortunately, it won't be the same for the Triangle. Any kind of merger inevitably would put Inc.'s 6,400 employees under the microscope. The company added about 900 employees last year. Not to mention, there goes another corporate headquarters for the Triangle. Also, let's not forget LabCorp already purchased another big CRO player last year, Covance, for $6 billion. Putting Inc. in its portfolio bag would only mean duplication of services, therefore potential savings. Before any kind of deal is announced, North Carolina Department of Revenue officials must go back and check the millions of dollars in tax incentives it gave to those companies. Let's make sure all those promises were met in terms of job creation and machinery and equipment credits and research and development credits. If the promises were not met, that money, credits, must be retrieved. LabCorp CEO David King made $10 million last year, and his company made almost $500 million. They can afford it. And the next column on the Viewpoint page is written by John Quinterno, who is a principal at South by North Strategies in Chapel Hill, a research firm specializing in economy and social policy. The headline on his article, "Despite Gains, Job Gap Still Remains in North Carolina." In March, employers in North Carolina added 12,500 more payroll jobs than they cut, with all of the job gains originating in the private sector. Over the past year, North Carolina gained 104,300 more payroll jobs than it lost, due mainly to private sector growth. Furthermore, the statewide unemployment rate of 5.5% in March was unchanged from February, and the March rate was 0.3 percentage points lower than it was a year before. These findings come from data released in recent days by the Labor and Economic Analysis Division of the North Carolina Department of Commerce. Between February 2016 and March 2016, private sector payrolls netted 14,000 positions, plus 0.4%, with public sector payrolls contracting by 1,500 positions, minus 0.2%. Within private industry, the trade, transportation, and utility sector netted the most payroll jobs, plus 6,600 or plus 0.8%, followed by the professional and business services, plus 3,900 or plus 0.6%, and the education and health services, plus 3,000 or plus 0.5% sectors. Over the year, North Carolina employers added 104,300 more jobs than they cut, plus 2.5%. Private sector payrolls gained on net 100,600 positions or plus 2.9%, while public sector payrolls added on net 3,700 jobs or positive 0.5%. With private industry, most every major industrial sector netted payroll jobs, with the professional and business services sector gaining the most positions, plus 28,400 or plus 4.9%, followed by the trade, transportation, and utilities, plus 27,400 or plus 3.5%, and the leisure and hospitality services, plus 16,300 or 3.6% sectors. A revision to the February payroll data found that the total payroll level was effectively unchanged from the January figure. With that revision, North Carolina now has on net 140,900 more payroll positions, plus 3.4%, than it did in December 2007. Since bottoming out in February 2010, the state's labor market has netted an average of 6,400 payroll jobs per month, resulting in a cumulative gain of 467,500 positions, or plus 12.2%. The slow but steady payroll growth experienced in North Carolina since 2010 has not yet closed the state's sizable job gap. North Carolina indeed has more jobs than it did when the recession started, but it does not have as many jobs as it should have. Meanwhile, the monthly household data for March contains some positive news about the state's labor market. The statewide unemployment rate in March was 5.5%, which was unchanged from the rate logged in February. Between February and March, the number of unemployed North Carolinians decreased by 131 persons, minus 0.1%, while the number of employed persons rose by 34,284, or plus 0.8%. Over that same period, the size of the statewide labor force grew by 34,153 persons, or plus 0.7%. Over the year, the statewide unemployment rate fell from 5.8%, with the number of unemployed North Carolinians falling by 7,017 persons, or minus 2.6%, to a total of 265,918. During that same period, the number of employed persons rose by 128,774 individuals, plus 2.9%, to 4,591,429, and the size of the labor force increased by 121,757, or plus 2.6%, reaching a total size of 4,857,347 individuals. Other improvements recorded over the course of the year include a rise in the share of working-age North Carolinians participating in the labor market to 61.8% from 61%, and an increase in the share of working-age North Carolinians who are employed to 58.4% from 57.5%. Although both of these measures have improved recently, they remain not too far from the lowest monthly rates recorded at any point since January 1976. North Carolina's labor market continues to improve at a slow but steady pace. The pace basically is sufficient to accommodate the growth in the size of the state's labor force, yet it is not rapid enough to eliminate the large job gap created during the last recession. A full recovery in the labor market, therefore, remains a distant goal. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to the People on the Move page, where the spotlight is on Mark Montoro with Raleigh General Manager at Data Chambers. After spending nearly a decade with the North Carolina Technology Association, where he served as Senior Director of Programs and Communications, Mark Montoro has now been tapped as General Manager of the Raleigh Data Center for Data Chambers. In his new role, Montoro is responsible for the business development strategy and operations for the IT service company's 10-person, 50,000-square-foot data center in the capital city. Started in 2002, Data Chambers specializes in enhanced cloud, enterprise management, and data center co-location services. The company has four data centers in North Carolina, the other three of which are in Charlotte and Winston-Salem, which has two. The data centers serve to guarantee uptime and to ensure the availability of mission-critical IT infrastructures for its clients. Data Chambers is helmed by Nicholas Kotyan and currently employs an overall workforce of about 60. It is owned by High Point-based North State Communications. What's one thing you wish people knew about your job? Most importantly, I lead our corporate stewardship initiative. Data Chambers is dedicated to supporting the tech and entrepreneurial community, as well as philanthropic organizations, so I want our team here to contribute time to charities that they are passionate about. What are some of your major goals for your new position? I know it will sound cliche to say that I want to be a partner to the tech community, but that is a big part of what I want to do. Data Chambers specializes in providing highly secure and available infrastructure as a service and co-location solutions, so I want to evangelize that to the community. But I also want to make sure that we are very involved in the community, supporting associations and charities that we are passionate about. Triangle area business person you most admire? I have gotten to know so many great leaders in the community that have been such a great influence on me. It is very difficult to single one out, but if forced to, I would say Alan West, President and CEO of Rail, Inc. He epitomizes being a leader in business and the community. Knowing the team Alan has built there and their commitment to giving back is something that I hope to emulate. Education, bachelor's degree in industrial relations from UNC Chapel Hill. Personal, daughters, Molly and Daphne. And now we turn to the small business section, where we read the column written by Clifford Jones, who is the founder and managing partner of Conversion Marketing Experts, a sales and marketing advisory practice. The headline on his column, why small business cash flow matters now more than ever. You can do all the right things to start, fund, manage, and grow your small business and still fail. I know from personal experience after watching my father start and build his businesses over the years. The lessons I learned as a kid growing up with two entrepreneurial parents drive me to be the consultant I am today. One of the most important lessons I learned over the years is the importance of focusing on cash flow. Relating to the recession. The last recession wasn't that long ago. In historical terms, 2009 is a lot easier to relate to than 1974. I was reminded recently of how painful lack of cash flow can be as I was going through some of my father's memoirs left to me in his estate. My father's story is one of a classic entrepreneur who would never stop working to build his small business and serve others. He inspired me to take a very similar path in life and business. As Dad would call it, the road less traveled. That to him meant being an entrepreneur in constant search of customers, capital, and cash flow to fuel his businesses and his life. Along with my father's hotel business, the cash flow for my family disappeared. His paycheck was gone. But the good news is through all of this, Dad and Mom reinvented themselves by starting a real estate brokerage called Old Mill Properties. Reinventing and rebuilding during tough times. They found a way to pivot and create cash flow even though they were living in less than ideal economic times. Because of their determination to reinvent and build all over, their real estate company was eventually purchased by Coldwell Banker and still exists in Laconia, New Hampshire today. We talked over the years about everything related to business. Dad was smart and I always respected his opinions. Dad's theory on keeping the cash flowing sounded like, if I can just rent enough hotel rooms and fill enough seats in the restaurant, I can keep the cash flowing, chop expenses where I must, and get through this lean economic time. Cash flow keeps you comfortable. Cash flow sure was the focus for my dad in all his business ventures. As soon as I was out in the real world and on my own, I knew what he meant. The lesson was pretty simple. Keep your expenses low and sell enough of what you sell to keep the cash flowing until you can position yourself to really cash in, a time that may never come and is always considered a bonus for the true small business owner. This is true because the nature of most small businesses is skewed to never selling the business for a big price or spiking revenue. It is most often about creating cash flow and maintaining a lifestyle and comfortable quality of life, living on your own terms, as Dad would have it. The question I wonder most about these days working as a consultant to many small businesses is, do we factor in as much as we can right now all that is taking place in our global economy that can hurt us and our cash flow as small business owners? My short answer is no. I don't believe most small business owners make the time to focus on both macro and micro political, social, and economic events that can hurt us. We're just too busy working in their businesses. A never-ending process. Is there any single way to protect cash flow? Not that I know of. Protecting and building cash flow is a never-ending process for small business owners who tend to be thinly capitalized and susceptible to competition and other pressures with the scale and structure larger businesses afford. This all starts with awareness, a sales and marketing mindset, and commitment to perform no matter what. For small business owners, this means taking a close look at every line item for sales, marketing, team, and tech, and quickly assessing what's working, not working, and what could be done next to pivot and find new customers and the cash flow that follows. In order to do this, you need great data. You need to know your key performance indicators, sales process, customer journey, and stories that include or lead to super compelling offers that help your customers get whatever it is they want. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we'll turn to the 9-to-5 section that has the headline, Construction Firm, Local Embassy Suites, and Orange County Bag Various National Awards. SPC Mechanical won the National Excellence in Construction Eagle Award from the Associated Builders and Contractors. The winning construction project was at the Southeastern Baptist Theological Seminary in Wake Forest. Durham-based Duda Payne Architects won the Association of College Unions International, ACUI, 2016 Facility Design Award for its renovation and expansion of Tally Student Union at NC State University. The project was selected based on its impact on academic and student life experiences. Morningstar Law Group joined the Warwick Legal Network, WLN, founded in 2001. WLN is an international group of independent middle market commercial law firms in 29 countries. Embassy Suites by Hilton, one of the Hilton Worldwide's 13 market-leading brands, announced this week winners of its global brand awards. Embassy Suites by Hilton RDU Briar Creek was awarded the Hotel of Excellence Award for 2015 and the number one overall service ranking for 2015 for all Embassy Suites hotels, the second year it received this award. The project was completed through a design-build approach that included Raleigh-based McKim & Creed Incorporated. Orange County Department on Aging, received the 2016 Award for Excellence in Multicultural Aging presented by the American Society on Aging, ASA, for the Aging in Community with Mandarin-Speaking Seniors, ACMS, program. And in our remaining time, we'll read from the list. ListMaker Pulse, industry leaders talk recruitment, hottest tech skills. Sid Mishner, managing partner of Vaco Raleigh. What are the hottest technical skills that candidates must have right now in order to get ahead in today's tech industry? There are many hot technical skills like cloud, IoT, and big data, but the skill that will help people accelerate their career is the ability to communicate complex technical concepts and problems in plain English for business executives. And we'll stop there as we've run out of time for today's episode of Triangle Business Journal. Be sure to listen at the same time next week. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Derek Frost, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for a blind and print-impaired audience. The program is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast. You can contact us at 919-832-5138. So long until next time.